Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, March 27th. Back on February 20th, I wrote that for over 11 years, I talked about the deficit situation in terms of laying out the facts, but also I wasn't going to lose any sleep over them in terms of their impact on the equity markets, and I was right. I then noted from that day forward, the deficits did matter in terms of the market's psyche, and you saw a classic example of this the past week, both here and abroad, as political leaders, central bankers, and market strategists attempt to come to grips with an issue that is going to be with us for decades. This doesn't preclude positive stretches for equities and positive yearly returns from time to time, but without a doubt, it will impact the rate of economic growth around the world. Just this week, you had Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke tell lawmakers that the U.S. government budget outlook is, quote, somewhat dark, and that Congress better get its act together soon. In response to a question about the budget impact of health care reform, Bernanke, while not addressing the new law, said, quote, clearly everyone agrees that the overall fiscal outlook for the government is somewhat dark over the medium term, and it would be very useful if there could be a bipartisan concerted effort to explain, demonstrate, and decide how the government is going to achieve a more sustainable fiscal trajectory. At the same time, PIMCO's Bill Gross, who it needs to be noted has become one of the more powerful men in the world, said the three-decade bond market rally is drawing to a close. It's about excess government debt and how to sell record amounts of it. In terms of the developed world, Gross says the only safe plays are those nations with low deficits, Germany and Canada. Bonds have seen their best days, Gross told Bloomberg Radio. This doesn't necessarily mean that yields go screaming higher, mind you, but this past week, you had a good example of the impact of shaky credit markets as the 10-year Treasury saw its yield go from last Friday's close of 3.69% to 3.90%, the highest mark since last June, before finishing the week at 3.85%. Sure, still well into record low territory, but it's about sentiment and perception, plus any significant move higher in the 10-year translates into higher mortgage rates at a time when the housing market is dead in the water. While any sane analysis of the economy has to include the caveat that there will be no sustainable recovery without an authentic rebound in the housing sector. This week we learned that new home sales for February, 308,000, were at their lowest level since they started tracking such data in 1963. Mortgage rates for the most qualified buyers may be at a still highly attractive 5.10% or thereabouts, but get them over 6% when wage gains are non-existent and the tax burden set to rise further, and you suddenly price out a lot of prospective buyers. There's a reason why the Federal Reserve is maintaining rates near zero. No one can tell you yet that the recovery we're in is in the midst of is truly sustainable. John Lipsky, an economist I've always respected, who's now first deputy managing director of the International Monetary Fund, said advanced economies face acute challenges when it comes to the exploding debt burdens. All G7 countries, except Canada and Germany, again, will have debt-to-GDP ratios close to or exceeding 100% by 2014. Some, such as economist Kenneth Rogoff, have said that when the United States hits 90%, we're almost there by the most common measurement, it becomes exceedingly difficult to sustain a solid growth rate. Lipsky, though, hits on the themes that are not about to go away. Quote, this surge in government debt is occurring at a time when pressure from rising health and pension spending is building up. Close quote. And it's not just about rolling back stimulus measures, withdrawal too early of which can lead to different problems. It's also about the risk of inflation as governments are forced to print more money, though I'm on record that when it comes to the U.S., at least, we have a ways to go before inflation keeps me up at night. Lipsky nails it in highlighting pension and health spending. I've been arguing that it's also about the public versus the private sector, and that's where you have the potential for a real civil war in America, figuratively speaking. Not a week goes by without a major front-page piece on how some taxpayers are increasingly disgusted that they are footing the bill for someone else's significant public pension through higher property taxes, while they themselves are seeing zero wage growth on top of cuts to their own pension and other benefits. Mort Zuckerman, editor-in-chief, U.S. News & World Report, We are lurching toward a financial crisis that is well understood by the public. In a recent poll, 93% of respondents said they are concerned by the growing deficits. 59% are extremely concerned. The public has come to understand what excessive debt means on a personal level, given how many people have mortgages that exceed the value of their homes and credit card lines that are beyond their capacity to repay, particularly if their income goes down. People also have come to understand how enduring personal debt can be and what it means for their economic future. Meanwhile, the country's debt has reached record highs for peacetime. This fiscal year, the federal deficit is expected to top $1.6 trillion, an astounding 10.7% of gross domestic product. This is double the 5% incurred during Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal from 1933 to 1936. The deficits through 2015 alone are projected cumulatively to exceed $6 trillion. And in contrast to the 1930s, today's deficit is not going to be financed by Americans. About half of it is financed abroad, mostly by China and Japan. Mr. Zuckerman continues, "Just think, our tax revenues are adequate to cover just four budget items: military spending, health spending, Social Security, and interest on the national debt. Every other program has to be covered with borrowed funds. This includes unemployment compensation, homeland security, support for state and local governments, federal outlays for higher education, satellite and manned space missions, the National Science Foundation, low-cost housing, infrastructure expenditures, the cost of our judicial and penal system. The list goes on and on. Let us also not forget that we still have to cope with large increases in entitlement spending as our population ages and healthcare costs mount. So the long-term fiscal crisis will be even more severe. Our cumulative national debt is expected or estimated to climb as high as 140% of GDP by 2030, up from 50% just a few years ago. If we fail to act in response to these deficits, we face the dangers of a collapsed dollar, of foreigners who may stop buying treasury bills, of soaring interest rates that will constrain our economy and require 7% of our entire economic output to be paid as interest to debt holders, and of a decline in public services." It was Mort Zuckerman of U.S. News and World Report. But while we can rant and rave about all this, it was none other than Alan Greenspan who got it right recently when he said spending is off the table. To which I observed, Americans don't have the guts to sacrifice. Some of us may talk of a smaller government, but don't take away my benefits. That's our attitude. So with all the preceding, tack on Obamacare. First off, the president deserves credit for perseverance, as does Speaker Nancy Pelosi. But come on, the vote was 219 to 212, 34 Democrats against, a margin of four in essence, four votes the other way, and no health care reform. What we've learned is Obama and Pelosi were indeed 10 votes shy in the days leading up to the vote, and then they pulled out all the stops. I join those in opposition who are sickened by the corrupt process that led to the passage of this humongous entitlement. As I'll point out in a bit, I also hope we can bury forever Barack Obama's claim to lead the most transparent administration in history. But I don't care as much that the process was not transparent as I do about being blatantly lied to and treated as a chump. There were facets in the shaping of this 2,700-page behemoth that were worthy of a banana republic. We are supposed to be a greater nation than this. I repeat what I first cited in this column on July 11th of last year, the comments of former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill in a New York Times op-ed from that week. This is what O'Neill had to say. "Healthcare reform seems to be on the way, whether we want it or not, so I've been asking questions about the various proposals. Here's a sampling. Which of the reform proposals will eliminate the millions of infections acquired at hospitals every year? Which of the proposals will eliminate the annual toll of 300 million medication errors? Which of the proposals will eliminate pneumonia caused by ventilators? Which of the proposals will eliminate falls that injure hospital patients? Which of the proposals will capture even a fraction of the roughly $1 trillion of annual waste that is associated with the kinds of process failures that these questions imply? So far, the answer to each question is none." O'Neill also noted, July of last year, that Obama likes audacious goals. Quote, "Here is one: ask medical providers to eliminate all hospital-acquired infections within 2 years. This is hardly pie in the sky. Doctors and administrators already know how to do it. It requires scrupulous adherence to simple but profoundly important practices like hand washing, proper preparation of surgical sites, and assiduous care, and maintenance of central lines and urinary catheters. Just through these steps, we'd save countless lives and tens of billions of dollars every year. That was Paul O'Neill. No one in their right mind denies that healthcare didn't need reforming, and yet how much of the debate was focused on the simple questions asked by Secretary O'Neill, beginning with the fact 100,000 die in our hospitals due to infections. Michael Goodwin, New York Post. Truth delayed is truth denied, or at least truth was denied until yesterday when the fig leaf of healthcare reform was shredded. Finally exposed was the holy grail of the ruthless quest. It was so our narcissist-in-chief could claim another notch on history's belt. Don't think for a second the whole last year was about reducing the deficit or bending the cost curve. Nor was it ever really about helping Americans who need better medical care. A handful of those poor souls were there again yesterday, human props for the show. As he smugly read the roster of predecessors who tried and failed from TR to Bill and Hillary, there was no pretense of modesty. This was about him. The imperial trappings of coronation of all things, a rock star introduction of the president at a signing ceremony, the giddy celebration of self and party, the hailing of bureaucrats and congressional hacks as heroes, and more odes to the Kennedy clan were as welcome as fingernails on a blackboard. Yet it was also predictable. A presidency dedicated to the pursuit of glory is a presidency squandered on ceremony. You're the reason we're here, Vice President Joe Biden said obsequiously to his boss. Never has a phrase been more pregnant with double meaning. Michael Goodwin continues, yes, Obama is the reason the Democrats were celebrating and the reason not a single Republican was with them. Not all Democrats were there, for at least opponents were bipartisan. Obama is also the reason more than half the country could feel uninvited to the party in the People's House. They made clear every chance they had, from elections to polls to demonstrations, that they were voting no. For their trouble, they were ignored and demonized. Their government does not represent them. It represents itself and its advocate acolytes. The party in a hothouse is what the Dems have become under Obama. Their disconnect from the people who pay for their imperial courts is now complete. They acted like children at a birthday party, oblivious to the pain in a nation where perhaps 15 million are out of work. Obama's the reason they are unbothered. He has reduced the jobless to a statistical annoyance. A president is elected to lead, and Obama is leading America into a dead end. He could have gone for honest reform by agreeing to important changes that enjoy broad public support. Michael Goodwin concludes, the chief aim should have been to arrest rising cost. The savings could have been used to expand coverage and ensure health care and the economy were on a stable course. Instead, he opted for a misguided takeover of 17% of the nation's product on the backs of a rented slice of Congress. The new entitlement will create a gusher of red ink, and there is a very good chance the world's finest health system will be diminished by longer waits, shoddy care, and higher cost. Thus is Obamaism. It is sold with claims so false they are odious. Glib lies repeated daily are means to the end in which the state assumes more power, more money, more control. When he says we, he means we the party, we the government. That was Michael Goodwin, the New York Post. Stocks rallied, despite all that, yet again a fourth straight week, though the gains were minimal, as has been the character of this rally that has seen stocks go up 6 weeks in seven. The Dow Jones rose 1% to 10,850, while the S&P 500 advanced 0.6% and NASDAQ 0.9%. Electronics retailer Best Buy helped move equities with a solid report. And while it wasn't a market mover, software giant Oracle didn't disappoint on the earnings front, though it had moved up substantially before, so the numbers didn't generate any new excitement. Meanwhile, as Palm appears destined for the trash heap, I finally took my Palm Pre out of its box and charged it up. Next week I may actually use it. Then again, I could decide to go for a jog instead. You can catch the rest of my week in review at stocksandnews.com. Click on the week in review link. Hope you have a great week. I'll be with you again next Saturday. I apologize for the lateness of this podcast. I had a little Easter egg hunt to do this morning, and I froze my butt off here in New Jersey. Take care.